There are many, and that is why there is no use of doing so much sadhan bhajan. What is it? If you are going and again coming, so what is the use?
Go there.
Better to be here. Any question?
Well, this leads to the kind of tattva brahma, the state of tattva, because all of a sudden Krishna is no longer all attractive. If we say Krishna is all attractive, but then if we left him, that means he wasn't all attractive. So this is a brahma, this state, or an illusion of spiritual knowledge. And this also gives the idea that Maya, as we were saying, Maya Shakti is more powerful than Swarup Shakti. And that's a form of Mayavadi, Mayavadism.
Also, Maya exists in Goluk Vrindavan.
Yeah. And it is more powerful than Swarup Shakti. That's a form of Mayavadi.
It's to Mago Mara.
But I say that Jesus was more. Example there.
Because there is no word to explain. Maya prabhav, influence of Maya, word is there. You will have to purify that word and by sadhana. By word you cannot. There is no word to explain this.
No language.
No reach of modern language there. So we will have to use this mountain
language,
and there is something. Impurity and defect in this.
So,
we have heard from our Guru Parampara, we have seen this picture. Yad Gattvāni Vasanti Tadhāma Padavam Maha. Going higher, never need to come back anymore in this material world. That is the eternal abode of Krishna. He just all given us in Sadhana Bhajan to attain the service of divine couple. So we try our level best to God, bear to Godhead. If going there again, he will fall down. Then what is to do Sadhana Bhajan? What to say about Jiva, who are eternal associates of Krishna, like all Vajavadis, like Sakharuval, Siddhama, Humangal, Nanda Yasada, Matayala, Dhakar, and all Gopi, especially Smadhi Radhika, then they may fall down from there because Krishna only, they can forget Krishna also, they can fall down, but it's not possible. This type of question is not so far question. To make us understand, give us only one idea.
Chatraketu Maharaj also. They need explanation, very deep theory, very deep meaning are there. Oh, that's all. Anyone cannot return back from Goluk Vrindavan or Vaishnava. So they wanted to please their Prabhu Narayana. and he has something to say
directly
to Rasa. And that is why Narayan attracted Jayakumar. They came. Anger and lust and anything, bad qualities are not in that. But even what he has inspired to be
thankful.
By Jogamaya. And pity. And they became angry. And they fought. And when court was done, then they were repenting. Then Narayan told, don't think. I wanted that. And they will go there for free
lifetime.
And in the meantime, they will be there. Then manifestation will go there. And he became like this. Chitraketu Maharaj in the same. Even Bharat Maharaj, who was in the position of a Rati, we never felt for Jiva.
To give us one lesson.
And for Narada, once, you know, I have told this story, that Narada, he conquered Kamdev. And he saw that all events, my Guru Shankar, he ran after Maya. When he saw Mohini, he became what? Like mad. And he ran after that Mohini.
Mohini Avatar.
Mohini. And then his Mrigachala,
his deer skin color,
his everything,
striker,
and naked he ran after to have that Mohini. He forgot that Krishna has become Mohini.
And
after that, what became? Oh, Parvati then requested that, what are you doing? What he forget. So, so Kamdev came and he could not do anything. And then he went to Shankar. Oh, I have Shankar. And he went to Brahma and told God. And even he went to Narayan. Oh, Narayan saw that, oh, this has become some Bhagandhar. Bhagandhar, you know?
Oh, God.
What? Some disease.
Disease, yes.
I should remove by
operation.
Without operation, this will not go.
Fine.
And like fine, you know? So I must hold it. And then what he did? Oh, then he told, oh, you are the best devotee of mine. I'm very proud of you. And then now return back to this universe. But with all beautiful kingdom, very, very beautiful. A king and his one daughter, very beautiful. He never seen a beauty like that. And then, oh, he went to him and told that I want to see his future, her future. And then he took his hand, in his hand, and was thinking how to obtain this, how should I marry this girl. Then, after seeing the hand, and he returned back, and he began to meditate his Prabhu, Narayan. Then Narayan at once came in his meditation. What you want? Oh, you should help me. You should help me. I want to marry that girl. Oh, Narayan told that, oh, be auspicious, Manga. I will do what?
Better man for you.
For you. He thought that he was satisfied and again returned back and he thought that he had given his form. Especially very beautiful mouth and body. And then he went there, and that girl taking a Vijayamala garland, very beautiful, to whom he will like to be eating, and marriage will be done. So he was going where that girl was moving, going.
Buddha Gaya.
Oh.
Going his head.
Showing his head. That is to be. And he was saying since something. And of it, hey, Shiva again to another. That not move that way fast. And in the meantime, one associate of Shankar, he was like, oh, so beautiful. How beautiful. How beautiful. And he was saying that, oh, really he said. But he was very
joking. Ridiculous.
In the meantime, oh, Narayan came himself, on Guru, and began to talk, and he
quarreled.
And quickly, without fell air, 1 minute, and Narayan took high on his leg, on Guru, and quickly, no, he's very big.
I saw him
without anything, and I wanted to.
Only
to marry that, and I asked for his beautiful face. I could see what face is. He saw in India,
monkey.
Water. Oh, monkey, black monkey, Indian black
monkey. Langur.
Baboon. A black monkey, right? Big step. And then he became happy. The actors ran away to fly to Vaikuntha, and he saw that all very lady, Lakshmi, and she's sitting here. Oh, you have what? What is me?
Sit me.
She said to me, so I will give you a call. Oh, you should wait like I am waiting for this lady. And in the meantime, he took his maya. And he thought, what is she was Lakshmi? Oh, it was operation for him. And then he fell flat.
Ramavatara Karam.
And this is the reason for Ram.
Ramavatara.
So, but really, Krishna or Narayan, by his yoga maya, he made for all other sources. This was not right.
Not my father.
So we should not think that the knowledge was also. He is from Golok, Vrindavan or Vaikuntha, and he was
in
maya. Later. So by the reach of Krishna, to fulfill the desire of his Prabhu, they can do anything. And for this, for sitting, for this people. So he cannot come from Guru Vrindavan or Vaikuntha.
Not falling down.
So he will say. So he will say. I'm finishing my class today. Tomorrow, it may be at 10, I may come in class. And we will proceed for
the
any question you would like, you can
go to the Rama.
What's the reason for living as it has minute independence?
Always, here or there, in this time also.
So how does the living as it probably
make them ready?
Because we see not perfect. And this is the symptom of each padartha. They are always independent. Whether they are found
bondage
or they are.
He wants to know how can he properly use his independence.
Krishna is very powerful. If he is really sincere, Krishna wants that all should come to me and sir. He never wants that anyone should be departed from me. And they should be really unhappy. Krishna wants. Once is sent to anything which is to be favorable, that he can easily take all these devastations. So,
like Priya Bhagavatam.
Like Priya Bhagavatam. So Krishna knows everything. If he will see that, oh, some very little thing is there that I want to serve. See? But these jivas are independent. If they will meet you, oh, then they will go down.
I think he's asking that in the Dhatastra region, from there we made our choice.
Yes.
But in the Dhatastra region, where did somebody get Gaudiya Sangha?
Oh. That is why. Very, this is high.
Look
here or here. Oh. There. Oh. Yogmaya. And this is.
Cassette 2, Side 2.
Chapter 7, The Levitating Saint. I saw a yogi remain in the air, several feet above the ground, last night at a group meeting. My friend, Upendra Mohan Chowdhury, spoke impressively. I gave him an enthusiastic smile. Perhaps I can guess his name. Was it Baudhari Maharshai of Upper Circular Road? Upendra nodded, a little crestfallen, not to be a news-bearer. My inquisitiveness about saints was well known to my friends. They delighted in setting me on a fresh track. The yogi lived so close to my home that I often visited him. My words brought keen interest to Upendra's face, and I made further confidence. I have seen him in remarkable feats. He has expertly mastered the various pranayamas mentioned in the ancient Eightfold Yoga outlined by Patanjali. Once Baudhari Maharshai performed the Bhastrika pranayama before me with such amazing force that it seemed an actual storm had arisen in the room. Then he extinguished the thundering breath and remained motionless in a high state of superconsciousness. The aura of peace after the storm was vivid beyond forgetting. I have heard that the saint never leaves his home. Upendra's tone was a trifle incredulous. Indeed, it is true. He has lived indoors for the past 20 years. He slightly relaxes his self-imposed rule at the times of our holy festivals, when he goes as far as his front sidewalk. The beggars gather there because Saint Baudhari is known for his tender heart. How does he remain in the air, defying the law of gravitation? A yogi's body loses its grossness after use of certain pranayamas. Then it will levitate or hop about like a leaping frog. Even saints who do not practice a formal yoga have been known to levitate during a state of intense devotion to God. I would like to know more of this sage. Do you attend his evening meetings? Upendra's eyes are sparkling with curiosity. Yes, I go often. I am vastly entertained by the wit in his wisdom. Occasionally, my prolonged laughter mars the solemnity of his gatherings. The saint is not displeased, but his disciples look daggers. On my way home from school that afternoon, I passed Baudhari Maharshi's cloister and decided on a visit. The yogi was inaccessible to the general public. A lone disciple, occupying the ground floor, guarded his master's privacy. The student was something of a martinet. He now inquired formally if I had an engagement. His guru put in an appearance just in time to save me from summary ejection. Let Mukunda come when he will. The sage's eyes twinkled. My rule of seclusion is not for my own comfort, but for that of others. Worldly people do not like the candor that shatters their delusions. Saints are not only rare, but disconcerting. Even in scripture, they are often found embarrassing. I followed Baudhari Maharshi to his austere quarters on the top floor. from which he seldom stirred. Masters often ignore the panorama of the world's ado, out of focus till centered in the ages. The contemporaries of a sage are not only those of the narrow present. Maharishi, you are the first yogi I have known who always stays indoors. God plants his saints, sometimes in unexpected soil, lest we think we may reduce him to a rule. The sage locked his vibrant body in the lotus posture. In his 70s, he displayed no unpleasing signs of age or sedentary life. Stalwart and straight, he was ideal in every respect. His face was that of a rishi, as described in the ancient texts. Noble-headed, abundantly bearded, he always sat firmly upright, his quiet eyes fixed on omnipresence. The saint and I entered the meditative state. After an hour, his gentle voice roused me. You go often into the silence, but have you developed anubhava, actual perception of God? He was reminding me to love God more than meditation. Do not mistake the technique for the goal. He offered me some mangoes. With the good-humored wit that I found so delightful in his grave nature, he remarked, people in general are more fond of jala yoga, union with food, than of dhyana yoga, union with God. His yogic pun affected me uproariously. What a laugh you have! An affectionate gleam came into his gaze. His own face was always serious, yet subtly touched with an ecstatic smile. His large lotus eyes held a hidden divine laughter. Those letters come from far off America, the sage indicated several thick envelopes on a table. I correspond with a few societies there whose members are interested in yoga. They are discovering India anew, with a better sense of direction than Columbus. I am glad to help them. A knowledge of yoga, like the daylight, is free to all who will receive it. What rishis perceive as essential for human salvation need not be diluted for the West. Alike in soul, though diverse in outer experience, neither West nor East will flourish if some form of disciplinary yoga be not practiced. The saint held me with his tranquil eyes. I did not realize that his speech was a veiled prophetic guidance. It is only now, as I write these words, that I understand the full meaning in the casual intimations he often gave me that someday I would carry India's teachings to America. Maharishi, I wish you would write a book on yoga for the benefit of the world. I am training disciples. They and their line of students will serve as living volumes, proof against the natural disintegrations of time and the unnatural interpretations of the critics. I remained alone with the yogi until his disciples arrived in the evening. Bhadari Maharsha began one of his inimitable discourses. Like a peaceful flood, he swept away the mental debris of his listeners, floating them Godward. His striking parables were expressed in a flawless Bengali. This evening, Bhadari expounded various philosophical points connected with the life of Mirabai, a medieval Rajputani princess who had abandoned her court life to seek the company of saints. One great sannyasi, Sanatana Goswami, refused to receive her because she was a woman. Her reply brought him humbly to her feet. Tell the master, she had said, that I did not know there was any male in the universe save God. Are we all not females before him? A scriptural conception of the Lord as the only positive creative principle, his creation being naught but a passive Maya. Mirabai composed many ecstatic songs, which are still treasured in India. I translate one of them here. If by bathing daily God could be realized, sooner would I be a whale in the deep. If by eating roots and fruits he could be known, gladly would I choose the form of a goat. If the counting of rosaries uncovered him, I would say my prayers on mammoth beads. If bowing before stone images unveiled him, a flinty mountain I would humbly worship. If by drinking milk the Lord could be imbibed, many calves and children would know him. If abandoning one's wife could summon God, would not thousands be eunuchs? Mirabai knows that to find the Divine One, the only indispensable is love. Several students put rupees in Badri's slippers, which lay by his side as he sat in yoga posture. This respectful offering, customary in India, indicates that the disciple places his material goods at the Guru's feet. Grateful friends are only the Lord in disguise, looking after his own. Master, you are wonderful. A student, taking his leave, gazed ardently at the patriarchal sage. You have renounced riches and comforts to seek God and teach us wisdom. It was well known that Badri Mahashaya had forsaken great family wealth in his early childhood when single-mindedly he had entered the yogic path. You are reversing the case, the saint's face held a mild rebuke. I have left a few paltry rupees, a few petty pleasures, for a cosmic empire of endless bliss. How then have I denied myself anything? I know the joy of sharing the treasure. Is that a sacrifice? The short-sighted, worldly folk are verily the real renunciants. They relinquish an unparalleled divine possession for a poor handful of earthly toys. I chuckled over this paradoxical view of renunciation, one that puts the cap of Croesus on any saintly beggar, whilst transforming all proud millionaires into unconscious martyrs. The divine order arranges our future more wisely than any insurance company. The master's concluding words were the realized creed of his faith. The world is full of uneasy believers in an outward security. Their bitter thoughts are like scars on their foreheads. The one who gave us air and milk from our first breath knows how to provide day by day for his devotees. I continued my after-school pilgrimages to the saint's door. With silent zeal, he aided me to attain Anubhava. One day he moved to Ram Mohan Roy Road, away from the neighborhood of my home. His loving disciples had built him a new hermitage, known as Nagendra Math. Although it throws me ahead of my story by a number of years, I will recount here the last words given to me by Badri Mahashaya. Shortly before I embarked for the West, I sought him out and humbly knelt for his farewell blessing. Son, go to America. Take the dignity of hoary India for your shield. Victory is written on your brow. The noble, distant people will well receive you. Chapter 8. India's Great Scientist, J.C. Bose. Jagadish Chandra Bose's wireless inventions antedated those of Marconi. Overhearing this provocative remark, I walked closer to a sidewalk group of professors engaged in scientific discussion. If my motive in joining them was racial pride, I regretted. I cannot deny my keen interest in evidence that India can play a leading part in physics, and not metaphysics alone. What do you mean, sir? The professor obligingly explained. Bose was the first one to invent a wireless coherer and an instrument for indicating the refraction of electric waves. But the Indian scientist did not exploit his inventions commercially. He soon turned his attention from the inorganic to the organic world. His revolutionary discoveries as a plant physiologist are outpacing even his radical achievements as a physicist. I politely thanked my mentor. He added, "The great scientist is one of my brother professors at Presidency College." I paid a visit the next day to the sage at his home, which was close to mine. I had long admired him from a respectful distance. The grave and retiring botanist greeted me graciously. He was a handsome, robust man in his 50s, with thick hair, a broad forehead, and the abstracted eyes of a dreamer. The precision in his tones revealed the lifelong scientific habit. I have recently returned from an expedition to scientific societies of the West. Their members exhibited intense interest in delicate instruments of my invention which demonstrate the indivisible unity of all life. The Bose crescograph has the enormousness of 10 million magnifications. The microscope enlarges only a few thousand times, yet it brought a vital impetus to biological science. The crescograph opens incalculable vistas. You have done much, sir, to hasten the embrace of East and West with the impersonal arms of science. I was educated at Cambridge. How admirable is the Western method of submitting all theory to scrupulous experimental verification. That empirical procedure has gone hand in hand with the gift for introspection that is my Eastern heritage. Together they have enabled me to sunder the silences of natural realms long uncommunicative. The telltale charts of my crescograph are evidence for the most skeptical that plants have a sensitive nervous system and a varied emotional life. Love, hate, joy, fear, pleasure, pain, excitability, stupor, and countless other appropriate responses to stimuli are as universal in plants as in animals. The unique throb of life in all creation could seem only poetic imagery before your advent, Professor. A saint I once knew would never pluck flowers. Shall I rob the rose bush of its pride in beauty? Shall I affront its...